The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
Good morning, Long Island, and welcome to DEI and Autism on 103.9 FM, keeping an eye on autism and giving a voice to its Long Island community. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Romas, and again, so glad that you can join us this morning as we share and explore all relevant issues related to autism spectrum disorder. My guest today is Dr. Gretchen Carlisle. Dr. Carlisle is a research scientist at the University of Missouri College of Veterinary Medicine Research Center for Human-Animal Interaction. That's a bit of a mouthful. Her research interests include companion animals, children, and their families. Dr. Carlisle earned a master's degree in education and counseling psychology with an emphasis on health education and promotion from the University of Missouri and is a certified health education specialist. She completed her PhD at the University of Missouri Sinclair School of Nursing. Welcome, Dr. Carlisle.
Good morning.
It's going to take me like another few minutes to get through all your credits, but thank you. Thank you for making this time. You know, your area of expertise, which is clearly around the therapeutic and clinical value that animals can bring to certain disability profiles, is of genuine interest to me and to listeners on this show. And we've had a couple of occasions where we've invited guests to speak to it. What really distinguishes you, and it makes me so grateful that you can be part of this, is that your work speaks to the fact that this is research-based, that there's real empirical science to support what a lot of us intuit. So maybe we could begin by just kind of like speaking to that a little bit, if you would, Dr. Carlisle, what are some of the research underpinnings around animal-assisted therapy?
Sure. Well, there are two things going on. Certainly, there is a growing body of work looking at animal-assisted therapy. So these are animals with a high level of training and for predictable, calm, social behavior. And their interaction with people, whether that's in a setting with physical therapy, occupational therapy, or in a counseling type of setting. And some of the benefits, one of the major benefits of that tends to be this, that sort of what we call the social lubricant factor. And that's that when people have an opportunity to have an animal present, they're just more likely to feel comfortable with the therapist or with the healthcare provider. And be more willing to engage and talk.
I think that's true. And that certainly has been my kind of informal observation. Do you have any thoughts around why that would be? Where does that comfort derive? Because I have seen it too.
Yeah, I think if you look around you in the setting of marketing or in movies, you'll notice in advertising that when people want you to feel good about them, they'll include a picture of themselves, perhaps with their dog. Mm-hmm. In movies, when it's the good guy, they will include a dog, you know, as this is a signal. This is someone nice. This is someone to get along with. So particularly for children, if they are seeing an animal with someone, with a healthcare provider or a counselor, that goodness and that positive feeling can tend to extend to the provider.
Yeah, I think that's true too. Would you agree that, at least in part, it's that the demands that an animal may or may not place are at the very least different than what another human being brings to the table. So in some ways, if you're constrained by a disability and maybe have some insecurity around that, that kind of, I don't want to say levels the playing field, but it's just novel enough and just different enough from the human experience maybe to allow for a little freer exchange.
Certainly. For instance, if you have a child with autism that has a set of very particular interests that may be foreign to other children or just not their particular interest, but if they have a companion animal, most children in America grow up with companion animals, so that becomes a common interest and a point from which they can extend conversation and relationship.
Sure. Now, is there a distinction between a companion animal and an animal-assisted therapy animal? Is there a difference there?
Right. So when I talk about animal-assisted therapy, you're really, again, talking about an animal that's had a certain level of training, right, to have that predictable behavior. But when we talk about companion animals or pets, this is really just your average pet in the home, and they may or may not have any particular training at all.
Sure. Well, that makes sense. And this is where the conversation, I think, gets, well, I don't want to say dicey, but crosses a very important line, because now when we ask listeners to consider the therapeutic or clinical value of working with an animal, that's the training. That's where we want to look a little bit more at the research. And that's a real distinction between just having a pet. So, and I, my understanding, Dr. Carlisle, is you've worked with more than one kind of animal in terms of studies, and maybe have a sense of what some of the value differences are and how that moves beyond just a companion and a pet to actually having therapeutic value.
Mm-hmm. So in some of my earlier work, I really was looking at dogs as pets in the home and what types of differences there would be. But in some of that earlier work, we found that there wasn't a significant difference in social skills for children with a dog versus no dog. Mm-hmm. But when I ask about just any pet in the home, there was a significant difference in social skills for children with autism. So that sort of made me scratch my head and say, as a scientist, and say, that makes it seem like there's some other pets in the home that may be having as much or more benefits than a dog. What was that tipping point? Mm-hmm. And that really led to a recent study looking at cats.
Yeah, I know that's going to be of genuine interest to just about everybody who's a cat lover. So let's talk about that. What are some of the distinctions that surround this study? Let's give it a title. What's the name of your study?
We call this the Feline Friends study.
Good. That's nice and easy to remember. And what are you looking at? What variables are you looking at? How are you measuring them? And what was your method? This is real science now.
Mm-hmm. Right. And in fact, in terms of real science, this study was really the gold standard because it was a randomized controlled trial, meaning we randomly assigned one group to control where they did nothing and waited, and the other group adopted a cat. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And no worries to everyone. Once the control group finished, they had an opportunity to adopt a cat as well.
Right. And this is a peer-reviewed study that's published. What was the Journal of Pediatric Nursing? Is that what it was?
Right. Yes.
Right. Very nice. Very nice. See, this becomes really critical because this adds credence to what people have always suspected. I mean, every time someone talks about the enormous impact that an animal's had on their family, especially a family that's dealing with someone on the spectrum, there's always that challenge. It's often, I should say, that challenge of, Is it just your perception? Is this just something because you love the animal? Or is there something that we can hang our hats on and say, no, this has really been controlled for? And you're giving us a sense of that. So let's talk a little bit about what you were able to measure. What came out of this study?
Right. So we looked at two things that are very particular to children with autism, and those are social skills and anxiety.
Right.
And so when we measured social skills and the difference between the children with no cat versus a cat, we found a significant increase in empathy after the adoption of a cat, which is really important for children with autism who can struggle with this.
Yeah, that's so true. And I know there's a lot of discussion and theories around the source of empathic deficits, if they really do exist, but all those discussions around theory of mind and that ability to read someone else's face and all that goes with that. How did you identify, well, first of all, how did you pick what you choose to measure? And then what constituted assessments of empathy? What was it, a questionnaire? What did you...
Yeah, what we utilized a questionnaire. It was the Social Skills Improvement System Rating Scale, which is widely used both in the autism research community as well as with typically developing children.
Right. So one variable that you looked at was empathy. Did you look at any other outcomes?
Yeah, it's one of the other important outcomes as far as social skills. The Social Skills Improvement System Rating Scale has survey questions regarding different things that can be called problem behaviors,
right,
such as inattention, hyperactivity, and these sorts of things. And we did find a significant decrease after the adoption of a CAT in some of these behavior areas.
Yeah, much more to discuss. So I'm going to ask the listeners to please stay with us. You know, you're listening to DDI and Autism on 103.9 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Romas, my guest, Dr. Gretchen Carlisle. And we're talking about the scientific and research underpinnings of the good outcomes, good clinical and therapeutic outcomes that can come with carefully designed work with animals. Stay with us.